Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams. I am here to help you stop dieting so you can get on with your life and do all the things that you want to do in your life without worrying about what you weigh. Oh, wouldn't it be amazing to think about your day instead of your diet? That's what it's all about. So if you want to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. You can also send me a message on Facebook, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. Email me, and I will answer your questions on air if you don't want to talk to me yourself. Because I would love to hear what's on your mind, what is eating at you, what is weighing on you. Because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, and any kind of emotional eating is not food. Food is actually the solution to the problem. The real problem is what is eating at you. So remember, if you're turning to food, you're turning away from something else. And that something else could be all kinds of things. But one common reason that people turn to food is loneliness. Loneliness can be experienced as emptiness. And sometimes we eat to symbolically fill that empty space within us. Remember, at a very basic level, food represents relationship. Now, we're not thinking about that consciously. We're not like, ooh, let me eat the rest of that pizza because that pizza represents people. We are not thinking that. We're thinking, I shouldn't eat that pizza. I'm going to eat that pizza. I really shouldn't eat that pizza. That pizza is calling me. I'm just going to have it now, and I'm not going to have it ever again until I lose X amount of weight. That's what we're consciously thinking. But unconsciously, we connect food with relationship. Why? Because at a very basic level, our first experience of relationship is bound up with the experience of feeding. Think about when we're infants and we're babies and we're held in our parents' arms and we feel that sense of safety and security. We have the gaze of our parents on us. We see ourselves reflected in their eyes. We feel ourselves held in their arms, and we feel safe and good and comfortable, and that gets associated with eating. So the bond that we feel as infants stays with us and becomes in our psyche an unconscious association to food equals people. So eating comfort food is really about a wish to be comforted. And think about the way we use the same words to describe both food and relationships. We talk about satisfying food and satisfying relationships. We say we're hungry for love. We're starving for attention. You get it. So here are some tips for dealing with loneliness. Some of them courtesy of me, some of them courtesy of Psych Central. So for one, realize that loneliness is a feeling. It is a feeling. It is not a forever fact. So when you're feeling lonely, when you're feeling anything actually, but we're talking about loneliness. So when you're feeling lonely, it may seem as if it's going to be a permanent state, but it's not. You are not going to be forever isolated and alone, however much you feel that way in that moment. What happens is your mind starts interpreting the feeling and giving it facts about the future. You ask yourself, why am I, hold that thought. I'm coming back to it right now. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Good morning, Dr. Nina. It's Nicole. How are you?
Good morning, Nicole. Nice to hear from you. What's going
on? Thank you. I'm glad you're back. We missed you last week.
I'm glad to be back, too.
I held on to my question.
Okay. What's the question?
Yeah. So 2 weeks ago, I remember I was asking a question, and then I had this other question, which is like, I feel like I can't, like, during lunch, I look at people who like are able to eat sandwiches and like enjoy it and like not feel guilty and just like, I don't know, they just like eat the sandwich and the fries and the whatever. And I just like look over and I'm like so jealous that they can just like eat it and like not feel bad about it and enjoy it. And I never do that. So like, I want to get over that. I want to be able to eat a normal meal or like a normal bowl of pasta or a turkey sandwich and a few fries and like not feel bad and not like look at them eat it and be like, what the hell? Why can't I eat it?
You know, Nicole, I can first of all totally relate to what you're saying, because I remember when I was in my full on eating disorder mode, which was between the ages of roughly 5 years and, you know, 20. And I remember being in high school, and of course for lunch I would have like a yogurt and three Diet Cokes, and that was a big lunch. And it wasn't even like I didn't yogurt. I remember one day I was sitting there like eating little teeny tiny spoonfuls of my disgusting yogurt, and there was this girl who had this sandwich that was like, I don't know, 4 inches thick, and she had like bread and it looked like turkey and cheese and tomatoes and lettuce, and she's just like eating it with relish. And I remember that moment of like, wow, that girl is just enjoying her sandwich. What a concept. So I share that to say that I relate to that, not just with what my clients and patients tell me, but I personally remember that moment of going, what must that be like? And thinking you can never be that person. But I will tell you, I am that person now, and you can be too. So first of all, there are a couple things that come to my mind. And one is you have these rules that we've talked about many times about how certain foods are good and certain foods are bad. And you can't veer into the bad category, and then you feel bad. And the other thing that comes to mind is that we talked about a few weeks ago, how the shame that you felt growing up, that if you were even a couple of pounds, you know, over what your mother thought you should be, then somehow you weren't good enough and you weren't acceptable, maybe not even lovable. So part of this goes to that. You're so scared of feeling overweight, I guess, or you're so scared of feeling like not your skinniest self, because that makes you not good enough on some level, that you're hyper vigilant about your weight because it has meaning to you, even a couple of pounds.
So
that's one level of this. And
okay, that makes sense.
And the other is sometimes, and I find, and I don't know if this resonates with you, but I found very often there's this sort of prohibition against yearning, wanting something, like wanting that really good turkey sandwich feels forbidden.
Okay.
Wanting something good feels, does that, tell me if that has any resonance for you.
A little bit. So like, I don't know, a guilty pleasure or something I really like that I don't eat often because I feel like it's quote unquote bad. It's like seafood spaghetti. Like I love a nice al dente spaghetti with like lots of seafood. So good. But I don't eat it that often because I consider it like a cheat meal or like bad or really high carbs and not suitable for, you know, maintaining and weight loss, maintaining your weight and losing weight.
You have these,
so I don't really eat that very often.
Yeah. Okay, here's what I have to say about this idea. You get the buzzer. You get the buzzer. Any kind of thinking that goes good, bad is detrimental to your well-being. Because remember that the anticipation of deprivation or the actual experience of deprivation just makes you want something more. That's why I started the example of, ooh, I shouldn't eat pizza, but I'm gonna eat it now, but I'm gonna eat all of it, but I'm not gonna eat it again until I lose X amount of weight. That is a setup. Whereas the people that you're talking about, by the way, I have a caller. I see a caller coming in. Can you call me back when I'm done talking with Nicole, please. I can only talk to one person at a time, and I can't take your call without cutting her off. So please call her. Call me back. So the anticipation of deprivation makes you lose touch with how satiated you are. Because if you eat that pasta al dente and you're like, ooh, I shouldn't be eating this, you're going to eat too much of it. You're not actually going to like it that much because you're going to feel guilty.
Right.
Whereas if you think, oh, I think I feel like having, you know, seafood pasta al dente, you're going to have it. And when you're full, you're going to stop because you can have it any time.
Right.
So that's part of it.
But then I have a question. If there's like 5 more pounds I want to lose, but we've talked about this too, actually. Why am I so obsessed with 5 more pounds? Then we talked about the guy who's 5 pounds heavier, 5 pounds lighter. Would I like him more? And I said no. And it made me feel the same way about myself. So why do I think the guy will like me more if I'm 5 pounds
leaner
than what I am now?
Because your mother, because your family made you feel as if somehow if you were 5 pounds too much, you were not good enough, and that, or two pounds, or one pound, or 1 ounce.
So how do I overcome that part? Because even till this day, my mom will like look at me, and she'll be like, "Wow, you lost so much weight. Your legs look." She says in Farsi, she says it, but she says, "Oh, your legs are half of what they were yesterday."
Okay, then it's not funny. It's not funny, Nicole. It's not funny. That's horrible. So you have to stop the body talk. You see, right now you like that. I'm guessing that when she says that, it's like, "Ooh, thanks, Mom." No. This is reinforcing.
No, but it also upsets me because why is she even scrutinizing my legs? Why is she even paying attention? Why is she even looking? Why is she noticing?
Tell that to her. Say, you know what? I am not going to respond to any comments about my body. And she's going to say, "What's wrong with you? You're so sensitive. You're something like that." You're going to say, "You know what? Think what you wish. I am not talking about my body with you. I don't want any comments, good or bad. None. You want to say I look happy? You want to ask how I'm doing?" Sorry, I'm on a roll here. Yeah. All right, I'm stopped. Go on.
No, I like it. No, that's good. But I'm saying then she's going to tell me that I'm being hostile and harsh.
Then this is what you say. I'm giving you a compliment.
What's wrong with you? Blah, blah, blah.
Mom, I'm sorry that I regret that you are interpreting my boundary setting as hostility. This is what's good for me, and please honor my wishes.
Okay.
And you know what? People,
I like that.
People try to get you to change. They try very hard because they don't want to confront their own stuff. They might like it. For whatever reason, this has been this way for however many years. So it's going to be hard to change. But when you change, everybody else has to change as long as you stick to it. So you just say, you're interpreting my boundary setting as hostility. I am not taking this as a compliment anymore. And so please don't compliment me in this way. You want to compliment my achievements. You want to compliment me on my personality. Go right ahead. But don't compliment my body because that's not the best part of me.
Yeah, I love that. That's so nice. Oh, my God, if only. Okay, I'm going to try that with her. And I think that would help.
And to answer your question, so you grew up feeling like you could only be good enough, quote unquote, whatever the heck that is, what is good enough, if you were a certain weight. And you're perpetuating that idea. And what has to happen is for you to sort of mourn that you got that message growing up. And again, I'm not about parent blaming. I'm not about family blaming. I'm about explaining. I'm not saying that you say, "Oh, my mom was obsessed with weight and it's her fault." That doesn't help you. But if you say, "My mom was obsessed with weight. She made me overvalue my sense of good enoughness and lovability as tied to my weight, and I want to work to change that," then That is an explanation. And mourning what you didn't get and coming to terms with this family value, overvaluation of weight, can free you from continuing to do it in your life now.
Okay, I'm going to try that.
Okay, please let me know how it goes. And setting boundaries with her will also help set boundaries with you. Because if you're telling her, hey, I don't want to hear it. Don't compliment me and tell me that my legs are half the size that they were as if that's somehow this great thing. Shut up. Then you're not going to do it to yourself. You're going to stop doing it to yourself as well. And if you start hearing yourself say, if you start saying things about yourself, tell yourself to shut up, just the way you tell your mom to
be. Same.
Quiet.
Okay, so self-talk. Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to do that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Dr.
You're so welcome.
I really appreciate it.
All right, let me know how it goes.
I will. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so we had a few callers who were trying to call in while I was talking to Nicole. If you want to call back, now's the time. If you call and I am on the phone with someone else, I will. It is a glitch in our system here. Ronan, the engineer, unfortunately can't take calls, so it's on me. So just know that if I'm talking to someone else, just wait till I'm off with that person and then give me a call. 818-602-4929. So I was saying that feeling lonely can be confused with being lonely forever after. It becomes less painful and more tenable. Here's a caller when you realize it's temporary. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Dr. Nina. This is Casey.
Hi, Casey. Welcome.
Yeah, so I'm immersed in this soccer culture thing here. And basically, I had some health issues a little while back and where I had to change my eating habits and pretty much lifestyle habits. So, I started running again, lifting, eating salads all the time, but it feels like I'm still putting on weight. I know last night I cheated and I had a chili cheeseburger and some other things last night. But other than that, I've been pretty good.
Go ahead. So first of all, cheated indicates that you think you should be having salads all the time. And you cheated. So tell me about this chili cheeseburger. What time was it last night that you ate it?
It was about, let's say, 10 p.m.
Okay.
And I usually go to bed by 10, so that's a big red flag there because I'm at work by 6 a.m.
Wow.
So it was just something I had to go pick up these jerseys for everybody, and everybody's jerseys fit, but mine. So I was so down this morning because all my friends were like, dude, it's you. Don't wait. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I was like, oh, my God.
Well,
I can't even wear my thing.
Well, let's see if we can get you back into your jersey, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so there are two reasons why people might eat a chili cheeseburger at night, at 10 o'clock at night. One of them is, believe it or not, that they don't eat enough during the day. They may be a dude who eats salad and is starving. And by the time it's 10 o'clock at night, starving, and then you eat something that's filling. So that's one reason. The other reason is that there's something going on that is uncomfortable emotionally, mentally, something like that. By the way, do you hear a weird buzzing I hear a weird buzzing. I wonder if it's...
I hear it every now and then.
Yeah, I think
it's in
my... I
don't know. It might be my phone line because my office is on.
Oh,
okay. It might be me.
It might be my headphone.
Sorry
anyway,
about that.
No, I'm sorry about if it's me. So the other reason is there's something going on emotionally that eating something distracts you from, because now you're thinking, why did I eat that chili cheeseburger? Oh my God, why did I do that? Now you're thinking about a chili cheeseburger instead of thinking about something else that may be going on. So which of those might resonate with you?
I think it was the first, because we were supposed to go to a friend's house. We were promised dinner. And so we drove to Hawthorne to go get these jerseys for everybody, and then the person didn't make dinner. So basically, that meal got replaced with 3 hours of talking. So by the time we were finished, we were driving back to Sherman Oaks, and I said to my friend, I was like, I'm hungry. And they were like, we want to get something to eat. And I was like, what do you want to do? And basically, Tommy's was the choice, and I was like, man, I haven't had anything like this in about 4 weeks. So I'm pretty much, it's the first thing I broke my whole sleeping pattern, my eating pattern, but I don't think that's the reason why I can't fit the jersey today.
But those,
you know,
add
I don't
up,
know, maybe it's because,
okay,
those, I think it's because, of, I want to say it's because I've been lifting weights now. I'm probably bulking up a little bit differently, but I was so down because everybody was so happy. I was just like, oh, I can't even wear this thing and spend all this money. And I got it for everybody. I'm the one person who can't fit it. So my boys were this morning were like, you're getting there.
Well,
so I don't know. I just feel like I'm still gaining weight though, Doc. You know, I don't know because I started running. I'm more active than I have been in the last 3 years, and this program is going on for about 2 months. I don't know if it's working.
So in the 2 months, so in the two months that you've been on this program, where you're eating a lot of salads, lifting weight, and running, you feel like rather than get fitter, which was sounds like was your plan, you feel like you're gaining weight. So
I just feel like I'm going up a shirt size.
Well,
I feel fine though. That's the thing. Should I just stick with it and stop being so hard on myself? Because I feel I have a lot more energy. My attitude's a lot better around everybody. I'm not so, you know, and a big thing, I don't drink during the week anymore because I love beer. And I only save it for Saturdays now. So my whole lifestyle's changed, you know, and it's been drastic. And I guess I just need this positive reaffirmation that I'm doing okay. Because I'm in my mindset, I'm like, you know what? It's not working. Go back to what you want to do.
Okay. No, you know? Okay. So here's what I'm hearing. You're making healthier choices. You're exercising. You're drinking. Sounds like much more moderately. And you're feeling good. So here's my question, Casey. Is there any possibility that your shirt size was too small? It's not that you're too big. Maybe the shirt's too small. Could that be it?
That could be it. It could be it. It was just tough at the moment when it happened this morning because everybody was just like, I felt left out of the happiness, and I'm like, you know what? It's not working. And everybody, you know, men can be kind of rough on each other. They weren't supportive. They were like, oh, dude, just maybe change the shirt or whatever. They're all saying stuff like, yeah, dude, it's you. It's you.
Yeah. Okay. Listen to me, not your dude friends. I think it may not be you. It may be the shirt.
And I'm not laughing. I'm just, you know.
You can laugh. It's kind of funny. You can laugh.
Okay.
Yeah, so here's what is. What is over the last 2 months, you have, you've been, it sounds like you've been pretty consistently making healthy choices food-wise. Drink beer wise and exercising more, and you've been lifting weights, which can cause you to, like, your guy, so lifting weights can make you bulk up, and that makes your shirt fit differently. And as long as you're not having a lot of cheat days with Tommy's, sounds like you're doing pretty well.
All right, I'm gonna go change my shirt size right now.
Well, go for it. Let me know how it goes, and be nice to yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't use your guy
friend. Yeah, that's the big thing, I think.
Don't use your guy friend's voice against yourself.
Yeah, because I will. Doc, thank you for the advice. Great show.
Thanks, okay. Casey. Let me know how it goes.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Aw. Yeah, guys can be rough. Sometimes I listen to my husband and the way they talk to each other, it's like, you guys are mean to each other. And they're like, we're not mean. We're dudes. Like, oh, you dudes are mean to each other. Okay. We women, not to cast broad stereotypes, we're mean to ourselves and nice to each other. Okay, so the other way to deal with loneliness is reach out to others instead of withdrawing into yourself. Now, you might react to feeling bad by just withdrawing away, hiding yourself, not wanting to be seen in the world, not wanting to talk to anyone, just sort of thinking, I can't be seen in the world until I am in a better place. And then what happens is you isolate and you're alone in your house or your room or your apartment or wherever you are, and and it ends up being you and the fridge. This is not helpful. So when you cultivate relationships and friendships and when you reach out to others, then you can fill up on people and have fulfilling moments and feel better, and you don't have to be your best self to be with people. That's what friends are for when you're not feeling your best, they help you feel better. And also, notice your self-defeating thoughts. We often create stories to explain our feelings. So when kids are young and they feel bad, they often think they're bad. They think, oh, there must be something wrong with me that people are treating me this way. Or I feel bad, I must be bad. It's sort of like the feeling becomes the fact. And then perception creates reality. Now, here's one reason why kids think, oh, it must be me. Because it gives them this element of hope. If you're in a situation that makes you feel bad and you think, oh, it's me, there's something you can do about it. Like, oh, I'm bad. If I could just make myself good, then I'm going to have a better life. People are going to treat me better and everything's going to be good. So it gives you this sense of you can control your world. Only the problem is there's never anything bad about you, your essential person. People aren't treating you badly because you're bad. People are treating you badly because, for whatever reason, having to do with them, which is different from punishment of doing something bad. So this idea of I can become good gives you a strategy for changing your circumstances. I'll just become good. I'll figure out what's wrong with me, and then I'll become good and better, and life will be good. Never happens. So it ends up just becoming a conviction that there's something bad and wrong with you. So we believe the interpretations that we tell ourselves. So you need to recognize your narrative. What are your ideas about why things are happening to you? People have ideas like, oh, you know, I must be too much. I must be too needy. I must have said something to that person that offended them. Or I just should only be nice to other people, and I shouldn't even talk about myself, or because anything I say is too much in some way. I mean, something like that. These are common kind of narratives. And if you recognize that narrative and challenge it, really? Is that true? Is that true all the time? And work to shift the narrative, you're going to feel better. Also, you need to make a plan. You need to have a strategy to fight the impact of loneliness. Now, I'm not talking about the narrative anymore. It's another way of dealing with loneliness. If your habit is to turn to food instead of to people, plan ahead. We turn to food because food is reliable, available, and consistent. Unlike people, who can be unreliable, unavailable, and inconsistent. You know those people. So since positive interactions with people is good, you need to make some effort to reach out to people who you know are reliable, are consistent, are available. So when you want to withdraw like a turtle into your shell and hide away, reach out instead. Reach out to someone who might be able to provide some comfort and also alleviate your loneliness. And that sometimes might mean making new friends, other people like you. Think about the things you like to do. Nowadays, there are so many ways to find people like you. Meetup is a great way. Go online, find other people who are into what you like. Even if you find them online, you don't even have to find them in person. Sometimes just finding people online is enough, because no matter where you are in the world, there is someone in your Facebook group, like say you love knitting, you can find your Knitters International Facebook group and someone is in there who's ready to talk about, I don't know, purling versus, what's the other way? I know how to knit, but I don't know what it's called. You know what I'm saying? You can find other people like you. You can relate. You can connect. And that is fulfilling. And then you will turn to people instead of to food. And sometimes you got to go out of your comfort zone to meet people. Remember, it's not about just having people in your life. It's about having the right people in your life. The right people. The people who make you feel like your best self, who make you feel safe, who make you feel known, who make you feel like you don't have to be perfect, that you could just be you, you could just show up. People like that, Those are true friends. And they're out there. Just got to find them. All right. Switching gears a little. I read this chapter in this book called, it's called, if you're watching this, if you're on Instagram Live, it's called Listen Up, Voices from the next Feminist Generation. Barbara Findlin, editor. So there is a chapter in here. This is not about feminism. This is about food, this one. This is a chapter that I just, so powerful. It's called The Body Politic by Abra Fortune Chernick. Oh, I don't think you guys can see that, but The Body Politic. I'm going to post a link to this. Here's something that she said that Nicole, especially anyone who could relate to Nicole, anyone who's actually a person in a body, that means, you know, you don't have to be a woman to be listening to this and resonate with it. Check this out. This actually mostly refers to women, but it can also refer to men. Here's what she says. A perversion of nature by society has resulted in a phenomenon whereby women feel safer when starving than when eating. Losing weight boosts self-esteem while nourishing our bodies evokes feelings of self-doubt and self-loathing. When our bodies take up more space than a size 8, this was written, I think, a long time ago. I'm going to say a size 2, a size 4, which is probably what a size 8 used to be when this was written. When our bodies take up more space than we think they should, I'll just edit her a little bit, as most of our bodies do, we say too big. When our appetites demand more than a lean cuisine, we say too much. When we want a piece of a friend's birthday cake, we say too bad. Don't eat too much. Don't talk too loudly. Don't take up too much space. Don't take from the world. Be pleasant or crazy, but don't seem hungry. Remember, a new study shows that men prefer women who eat salad for dinner over women who eat burgers and fries. I just have to say, I don't know what that study was, but I have had so many men in my practice because I see a lot of men in my practice, and so many of them have said, oh my God, I would like to take a woman out to dinner who will just order a damn steak or a burger. I hate going out to dinner and having these women who are like, I'll just have a salad, like eat something for God's sake. A man once said to me that he wished that his date would have had. So I don't know about that study. Back to Abra. So we keep on shrinking, starving away our wildness, our power, our truth, hiding our curves under long t-shirts at the beach, sitting silently and fidgeting while others eat dessert, sneaking back into the kitchen late at night to binge and hating ourselves the next day, skipping breakfast, existing on diet soda and cigarettes, adding up calories and subtracting everything else. We accept what is horribly wrong in our lives and fight what is beautiful and right. Over the past 3 years, feminism has taught me, Abra Fortune Chernick, who is writing this, feminism has taught me to honor the fullness of my womanhood and the solidness of the body that hosts my life. In feminist circles, I have found mentors, strong women who live with power, passion, and purpose. And yet, even in groups of feminists, my love and acceptance of my body remains unusual. Eating disorders affect all of us on both a personal and political level. The majority of my peers still measure their beauty against anorexic ideals. Even among feminists, body hatred and chronic dieting continue to consume lives. Friends of anorexics beg them to please start eating. Then these friends go home and continue their own diets. Who can deny that the millions of women caught in the net of disordered eating will frustrate the potential of the next wave of feminism? Sometimes my empathy dissolves into frustration and rage at our situation. For the first time in history, young women have the opportunity to create a world in our image, but many of us concentrate instead on recreating the shape of our thighs. We must place unconditional acceptance of our bodies at the top of our agendas. We must claim our bodies as our own to love and honor in their infinite shapes and sizes. Fat, thin, soft, hard, puckered, smooth, our bodies are our homes. By nourishing our bodies, we care for and love ourselves on the most basic level. When we deny ourselves physical food, we go hungry emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, and politically. We must challenge ourselves to eat and digest and allow society to call us too big. We will understand their message to mean too powerful. Time goes by quickly. One day we will blink and open our eyes as old women. If we spend all our energy keeping our bodies small, what will we have to show for our lives when we reach the end? I hope we have more than a group of fashionably skinny figures. That actually got to me. It's like kind of making me cry a little bit because it's so powerful. It's so true. It's so painful to think that we diminish ourselves and call ourselves powerful. Just like Nicole's mom thinks she's good because her thighs are thinner. No, this is not what makes us powerful. This is not what makes us better. Our bodies are our homes. We need to take care of our homes. If you take care of your home, you do the dishes and make sure the kitchen's clean and bedrooms and everything and clean the floor. Like, do you take better care of your actual home than your body home? And if so, why? Why? So, hey, here's a challenge. Give me a call or write me in Facebook and tell me how you're taking care of yourself. I would really like to hear that. What are you doing to take care of yourself? And of course, if you have any other question, give me a call, 818-602-4929. Any comment, any question, call me. Now, of course, I've said that and I can't reload Facebook. Well, if you write me and I can't get it, I will answer next week because apparently my computer thing is off. That's not going to help. Okay. Alrighty, here's another reason why you might be turning to food. Remember, if you're turning to food, you're turning away from something else. You're trying to help yourself in some way. Eating, overeating, stress eating, binge eating, compulsive eating, it is a solution to the problem, and it is a frenemy. It is a friend. It is helping you. It is helping you in some way. It is also hurting you. So another reason you might be turning to food is anxiety. Now, anxiety is experienced both in your mind and in your body. It shows up in fearful thoughts and in physical sensations. You know, tension, your heart might be beating really fast. You might have that idea, like sometimes I get this sense that something's like a fist is tightening around my insides, like there's something just gripping everything within me. That's how I feel anxiety. Other people feel like tension in their shoulders, or they feel just this horrible nervousness. It's this physical dread. So anxiety is both mental and physical. And one way to deal with it is calming your body. So you can calm your body by using a muscle relaxation exercise, which I'm going to teach you in a second. You could do it by walking, by working out, anything physical. However, this is only part of the fix. A lot of people say, oh, I was really anxious, or they said they were angry. They're like, oh, I worked out, so why am I still feeling it? Well, because you got rid of the physical sensation of the feeling, but you didn't deal with the thoughts. So this is just to be, you know, transparent. This is not going to help you with all your anxiety. It's just going to help you with the physical part of your anxiety. So a relaxed body is the first step to relaxing your mind. But to relax your mind, you got to recognize what's in your mind, what thoughts you're having, challenge them, reassure yourself, and all of that. So this is a comment that I get a question like this very often. So this comment you might be able to relate to. This person says, I know it's important to identify and process my feelings so that when I'm upset, I don't turn to food. But sometimes I'm too stressed out to deal with what's going on inside. So what else can I do when I feel this way? Well, if you're used to turning to food to deal with the anxiety, food also provides sort of a numbing effect. It makes you like lethargic. It calms you down. It relaxes you. So we want to find other ways to relax. And one of these ways is called the progressive muscle relaxation. And what you do, you could do it anywhere, anywhere. You could even do it when you're around people, but you might look a little funny. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to demonstrate it for you. What you do is you want to tighten all your muscles. Now, it's called the progressive because you're supposed to start with your legs, tighten up your legs and then relax them and then move on to your abs and your core and then your arms and your shoulders and just your whole body. I think it's helpful to just do everything at once. So it doesn't have to be progressive. It can just be sort of a whole body muscle relaxation exercise. And what you do is you just tighten up as tight as you can possibly do. I'm doing it right now. I'm gripping my fists. I'm making like, hey, check this out. Look, a muscle. Okay, muscles. And you hold it and you hold it and you hold it and you hold it and you And hey, guys, watching me on Instagram, if you're alone, try this with me. You're going to be amazed. You're going to be totally amazed. This really, really works. So you just ideally want to do it for like as long as you can. And let's just do it another 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then totally relax. Totally relax. And when you do that, you totally feel this relaxation. Because if I just say to you, hey, relax. Does that work? Does someone say relax and you relax? No, it does not work. This works. You got to give yourself something to relax against. So that is one thing that you can do and you can repeat it. Same with deep breathing, lots of different things. So the idea is that without muscle tension, you can't access muscle release. So this gives you access to muscle release, really relaxes you, and then you can have a moment to then attend to the mental aspect of what's causing the anxiety. So also, living with anxiety can be so difficult. It can just take over and build on itself and grow. And it's so painful and difficult. Remember that you don't have to live with anxiety forever. There are things that you can do. You can relax your body and you can change the way you think. In the long term, you're not going to live with anxiety. You change your mind, you change how you feel, and you change what you do. Because thoughts and beliefs lead to feelings, lead to behavior. If behavior is eating, changing the eating is not going to last in the long run. You need to look at what are the thoughts and beliefs that you may not even be aware that you're having. What are the thoughts and beliefs that lead to the feeling, whether it's anxiety or loneliness or what have you? All feelings generally are distilled to mad, sad, glad, and afraid. And then whatever you're feeling, if you don't have a strategy to comfort yourself with words, you might use food. So that's what we're here to change. That's why to change the turning to food, you gotta change your thoughts. Here are some more strategies. These are from the Calm Clinic that can help you begin to lower your anxiety. The other thing is to control your breathing. Controlling your breathing is a good solution to help relax your body. So even when you're anxious, sometimes you can hyperventilate, feel like you can't catch your breath. And so one thing to do right away is breathe in slowly through your nose, by the way, not through your mouth. Slowly through your nose for about 5 to 7 seconds, although they say 5 to 7 seconds. Have you ever tried to breathe in for 5 to 7 seconds? It's almost impossible. That's a long time. Say 3 seconds, 4 seconds, however long. And then you breathe out. You hold it for another few seconds, and then you breathe out through your mouth. And you just do that a few times, you will find there's a big difference. Here's something else you can do to control your anxiety. Same with loneliness. Talk to someone. Talk to someone friendly. Talk to someone nice. Talk to someone that you love and trust. And be okay with revealing and sharing that you're anxious. Be okay with needing help. Often people are afraid to say, hey, I need help. I'm struggling right now. as if they're going to be a burden to other people. But think about it. Do you have any friends who call you and say, oh my God, I had such a day, I need to unload? And you say, yeah, tell me about it. Do you say, oh no, not you again, not again? Unless it's that friend, that's all that they say. But that's probably not you. So have faith that people are interested in helping you feel better, and reach out to someone who's safe, who can listen to you, and your anxiety is going to be better by the time you get off the phone. Because talking to nice, empathetic people keeps your mind off of what you're feeling and may help you deal with what you're thinking that leads to what you're feeling. And by the way, if you want to talk to someone who's nice and empathetic, give me a call.
You see it.
We don't have much time right now, but if you want to call for a quick minute, call me 818-602-4929, or call me next week or anytime that I'm here on the air, and have a sense of what it's like to talk to someone nice and empathetic. And then maybe next time you feel that way, you'll do that with one of your friends, or you'll be nice to yourself. That's the idea. Also, here's another body result that, you know, body thing that you can do that has results. When you're anxious, your body is full of adrenaline. Putting that adrenaline towards exercise, like aerobic activity, can be a great way to improve the physical manifestation of anxiety. It burns away stress hormones. It tires your muscles, makes you relax. It releases endorphins in your brain, makes you happier. It's linked to healthier breathing, by the way, exercise, and it's a healthy distraction from what you're feeling. And it can be very, very effective. And also think about what already relaxes you. Think about the things in your life that you already know are relaxing and calming. Make a list. Again, plan ahead so the next time you feel it, you have a list ready. By the way, if you haven't already, I have on my website, which is DrNinaInc.com, DrNinaInc.com, I have a free giveaway called 25 Ways to Cope Without Food. Stop stress eating, 25 ways to cope that don't involve eating. Get it if you haven't already. Get it, download it, and one of those 25 ways is going to help you out. Also, aromatherapy and essential oils are really helpful for this. Again, these are brain things; these aren't psychological things. But we want to address that we have minds and brains. We have brains and minds. So mostly, I talk about the psychology, but sometimes I want to bring in aspects of healing that do have to do with just your physiological brain self. And essential oils have been used for thousands of years to alleviate symptoms. And you don't have to have some special diffuser or whatever. You can just get some oil, put a few drops in your hands, rub them together, and then voila, just smell the oil and get the effect. Here are the oils that are great for treating anxiety: lavender, cedarwood, and chamomile. How are we doing? We have time for about one more. Learn how to manage your anxious thoughts, which is a little bit what I was talking about before. Thoughts and beliefs create emotions, which in turn lead to behavior. If you have a thought like, everyone hates me, I'm such a loser, I'm not good enough, I'm being judged, I'll never be good enough, you're going to feel anxious. You're going to feel terrible. So one way to manage these thoughts, once you identify what you're thinking, is to question whether it's a fear or a reality. Because if you're thinking, everyone hates me, is that really true? Does everyone on this planet, in fact, that you know, in fact, hate you? Are you really a loser? How are you defining that? And when you can say, well, wait a minute, it's my fear that everyone hates me, it's my fear that I'm a loser, then you can question it. Really, what's the reality? Because what if I'm a loser is a lot different than, wait, here are the reasons I am a loser, but here are the reasons I'm not. So everything you know to be true is in what is, which is reality. And you need to use what is to counter the idea of what if, which is just fear. What if is fear about the future? So ask yourself, is there actual evidence that everyone hates you? Is there actual evidence that you're a loser, not good enough, or that you're being judged? chances are there is no real actual evidence that all people believe you're a loser or something's defective about you. It is just a feeling, and feelings are not facts. And that is where I have to end today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday on LA Talk Radio live at 10 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to podcasts. I am so glad that you joined me today. If you liked the show, please take a moment to just give it a rating or even a review, because the more ratings and reviews that we get, the more it shows up in people's searches and the more we have an opportunity to help other people out there just like you. So thank you so much, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.